Basically, the 2007 National Resource Inventory Test Protocols is on pasture land, and what we're trying to do is expand our body of knowledge on pasture lands across the country. Dr. Leonard Jolly currently is a grazing lands ecologist at our Resource Assessment and Inventory Division at Beltsville, Maryland, and he's been very instrumental in getting money set aside in 2007 so we could conduct this test. And what we want to do is then launch that across the country starting in 2008. This year we had five states that were being used as our test states, Colorado, Florida, Missouri, Kentucky, and Pennsylvania. We tried to get a broad swath of the country so that the test protocols that we're using to collect this field data could be validated across a wide range of conditions. Each state had 10 pasture sites, and they did two macro plots on these pasture sites. Now, that wouldn't necessarily be just a single pasture, but it might be a pasture on one side of the fence and another macro plot being done on a pasture on the other side of the fence. So the pasture site actually be like one farm where they might have multiple pastures that could be tested. So overall, we'll have 100 observations this year, and actually next week we're going to be meeting in Beltsville to see how the protocols went and how we might massage them to adjust them before we start the 2008 test. The National Resource Inventory itself is started back in 1977, and at that time we did go to the field, and that was done each time. Every 5 years there would be the same primary sample unit points would be visited on a five-year schedule. Now we're starting to do this on a yearly basis where we do actually about one-fifth, so that in five-year period of time you've covered all the primary sample unit points again, but we're not doing it all, trying to do it all in 1 year, because that actually the logistics in that really never worked out very well. 1992 was the last year actually field data was collected, and based on the kind of the lack of detailed information that we were collecting on pasture sites, that was probably okay. You could do remote sensing and tell for sure whether it was a pasture or whether it was a hay field or a crop field. That wasn't a real big deal. But the problem was we really weren't capturing a lot of information that most people like myself, a grazing land specialist or a pasture specialist, would really want to know about a pasture. We're more interested in, okay, what's the species composition? Is it tall fescue pasture dominated? Is it a Kentucky bluegrass dominated pasture? Is it Bermuda grass? And really, from the old information that we collected from the National Resources Inventory, you could never tell. We had broad categories like cool season grass versus warm season grass. Well, warm season grass, that could be anything from bahia grass to big bluestem. And so you never really had a good idea, other than the fact that if you knew where the primary sample unit points, you might be able to surmise something from it, from the location that it fell on. And then it actually got kind of worse. We actually ended up with only three pasture type choices in NRI after the, I think about 1997. They dropped it down to only three categories. And a lot of our permanent pastures, there wouldn't be anything that would probably be 100% legume. So that's a category that almost, from a permanent pasture standpoint, is probably not very worthwhile. So now what we're going to be collecting data on is actually moisture conditions. We're actually looking at the Palmer Drought Index and the Crop Moisture Index. We're going to be doing plant species composition, current dry matter production, canopy cover, canopy height, ground surface cover, is it litter, is it rocks, plant crowns, stolons, what is it? Pasture condition scores, which we got a system set up for doing pasture condition scoring now that was produced back in about 2001. We're doing soil fertility testing at 0 to 2 inches and 2 to 4 inches into the soil. We also make sure that the soil map unit component that the primary sample point falls on is that it is the soil type that's on the stated on the soil survey map. Because of the scale of that mapping, a lot of times we'll end up on a soil that's actually an inclusion that's contained within that map unit. So it may not be the named soil necessarily there. And then the last thing is we'll be looking at soil erosion, and we'll be looking at that beyond just sheet and rill. We'll actually be looking at fields where there's a stream running through it. Is there stream bank erosion, and what's the severity of that, and things of that sort. Moisture conditions, we've got a graphical depiction of the Palmer Drought Index map. It's the one that, behind the crop moisture index. We actually look at the tabular data that's being recorded by the NOAA, the Weather Service. And that data is collected so that when we're out there looking at a primary sample unit point, we have some idea of what the moisture conditions were at the time we were there. Now that'll have a big impact, of course, on yield. And if you've been in a long-term drought, may even have a lot to do with what we're seeing for species composition out there. In some cases, we'll probably lose something like white clover, for instance, will come and go based on the kind of moisture conditions you have. Our sample plot is about 0.18 acres, approximately almost 8,000 square feet. And what we do in that sample plot is we actually have two transects. We have one that runs from northwest to southeast and another one from northeast to southwest. And the samples then are conducted along these transects for a lot of the point data that we're trying to collect. That primary sample unit point itself, when we actually start going to sites where these have been registered and they've been the same primary sample unit points that we had back in 1977. So we always go back to the same site over a long period of time. And that'll be found using GPS grid coordinates. One of the things we'll be doing at the actually the macro plot scale, we'll be actually doing a plant census there where we're actually looking at the abundance and the cover type for the different species that are growing out there. And this will be a complete plant census. We don't care whether it's a forage or a near forage like a dandelion, or whether it's Canadian thistle, Queen Anne's lace, whatever it is, every plant growing out there, multiflora, rosebush, some kind of a, maybe a red cedar or something like that will be counted into this kind of plant census. And then dry weight rank, we also do, we determine what the three primary species are that are inside of a square quadrat. Basically, we're using the 1.92 square foot quad, which is laid down on the ground. And then that, we determine, we rank what the top species is, who ranks number two and who ranks number three. And if you do that over enough quads, you end up with a species composition. And that can be done collected and put onto an Excel spreadsheet that actually does the calculations for you, and then it comes up with a species composition over here in the rightmost column. We'll also be clipping. Right now we're clipping 8 quads out of those ones that we, out of the 20 that we do the dry weight rank method in. We clip to the ground because we're going to be looking at pastures that are going to range from something that's probably been continuously grazed and maybe grazed extremely close to ones that may be in a rotational grazing scheme. And depending where that point falls, it might be in a paddock that hasn't been grazed for maybe 1 to 2 or 3 weeks or something like that. So you're going to get quite a wide range of vegetation and dry matter production in these different quads. Another thing we'll be doing is the line point method along these transects. We basically just use a wire flag And at the 2 foot intervals, we decide whether we're hitting canopy. We record the canopy, what the species of that plant is. And then we extend that down to the ground to determine whether we're hitting any plant residue at the bottom or rock or bare ground and things of that sort. And while that's being done, we have a recorder here that can record that information. Canopy height that's done basically at the same time, so we have some idea what the height of the grass is out there. Once we've collected a lot of that primary information like that, then we do the pasture condition scoring. We've got these 10 indicators over here on the right-hand side. And a lot of that information that we collected along the transect and then the quadrats will actually answer a lot of these questions. What's the percentage of plants out there that are desirable forage plants? What is the plant cover? What's the plant residue cover? Plant diversity. A lot of those things are answered by that preliminary data that we collected. Over here on the causative factor side, with the soil fertility analysis that we do it, where we take the soil tests and then have those analyzed, we'll get information on the phosphorus and potassium lead status of the soil, pH status, and some of these other things then we do pretty much by inspection out there. With the climatic stresses, then we go back to that Palmer drought index and the crop moisture index. Soil fertility has been an interesting one. We interjected this one in. We don't know how long we can continue to do this because there's quite a bit of expense involved in getting the soil test analysis done. But it is interesting looking at these two different depths at 0 to 2 inches and 2 to 4. And basically, this is kind of the protocol we're using now. We take 5 samples within each quadrant of this macro plot. And in about this kind of spatial arrangement. And what we try to do is avoid anything where there's going to be either a noticeable urine spot or a dung area. We don't want that to kind of influence the data that we're getting from our soil test results. And if you look, there's an old Scottish pasture that probably been in the pasture for probably a century or more. And you can see here with the phosphorus and with the potassium levels that they tend to get pretty high in the surface. And so we were wondering whether we'd get that same situation here in the States. And as a result, this is an example of some of the results we got back from our Missouri sampling. And these are across the x-axis there, we have the soil test sample. We had 20 samples done at these two different depths of 0 to 2 inches and 2 to 4 inches. And you can see in some cases we've got quite a spread between what's at the surface and what's at the 2 to 4 inch depth. In other cases, we might be quite close. What will be interesting, since it's just very preliminary data, is why are we seeing these differences as we go and look at different macro plots? Why have we got such a big spread here? Is there something that's influencing the fact that we've got a lot more phosphorus in the first 2 inches? Is it close to a feed bunk? Is it close to a water trough area? Is it close to shade, where you might expect the amount of nutrients being deposited by the grazing animals to cause that to increase considerably? And the same thing we're seeing with potassium. At times they're very close together, and other times there's quite a disparate difference between the 0 to 2 inches and the 2 to 4. And this kind of concentration you'd kind of expect, because the fact of the matter is everything is surface applied, whether it's a commercial fertilizer or what's being deposited by the grazing animal itself. And we're also seeing the same thing, especially with organic carbon. There's a lot of concentration going on. As I mentioned earlier, we usually will have a soil scientist there to verify that the soil type that we have on the soil map is actually the one that's at the primary sample unit point. So basically, what we hope to do with this new information is that we'll be able to define pasture plant communities, because most of our naturalized pastures are no different than rangeland, and the fact that they've had time, sometimes 100 years or more, to naturalize and have a species composition that's quite different from what was probably originally planted there. We can also detect whether we got brush or noxious weeds that are starting to come in. We can look at the influences that determine what that plant community ultimately becomes to be on a naturalized pasture. We can look at the soil fertility status. We can look at soil carbon status and see how that's being influenced. A hydrologic cover present. Ken Spaeth, my co-author, and is a hydrologist, and he will be looking at a lot of this cover data to see what the chances are for getting runoff off of some of these different types of pastures, the severity of runoff, and looking perhaps at some of the erosion rates. Looking at the presence and severity of stream bank and shoreline and gully erosion is something that we really haven't done in the past, so that will be picked up. Another thing that's especially interesting to me is the presence of legumes in pastures. If we have a problem, maybe we can start to find out why we have a problem and that we're not able to maintain legumes in pastures. And some it's a fertility problem, some it's a management and how we graze those pastures. But there's a combination of those two, and maybe we'll find out more by looking at the underlying data as well as the percent legume growing out there. And lastly, we'll know the condition of the pasture resources and maybe be able to make some management decisions on how we can approach our pasture management to make the situation better out there once we've gathered more of this information over a wide portion of the country in the next 5 years or so.
Okay, thanks very much.